Okay, lovely to meet you all. So I'm Stephen Blake. I run a company called Respondability. And it's about dealing with your thoughts in such a way that they don't trigger emotions that you don't want. And I think we all have that, don't we? Okay. So today's topic is beat the blast from the past. So I'm going to talk about past, present and future just for a few moments to set the scene for it. So if we live in the past, if we have past regrets or things we should have done or things we did do that we shouldn't have done or things that we thought we would have wished we'd got there by now but we never did anything about it, we can tend to live in those thoughts and they're very unhelpful to us because we're not actually learning anything from it, we just keep nipping back there. And we keep nipping back there over and over and over and over again. And we never actually wind it up. We never actually come to a conclusion about it. And because of that, you will continue doing that forever. Okay? Unless you do something about it. But the thing is, we're averse to change. And you're unconscious, and I'll talk about unconscious rather than subconscious, because it's not below anything. Your unconscious is way above your conscious. Still means you can't see it, but it's there. So your unconscious is this all-powerful thing that drives everything you do. And we're born with so much of it programmed. That's how we know to eat, drink, have blood running around the body and everything else. But it also, we teach it things along the way. And it picks up these lessons, it remembers them, and then it runs it as a program. And once it's learned it, it goes, I'll take over now. And it runs it for you. But it's these programs that we put in there that in the end are the ones that annoy us. And yet, if we don't do anything about them, it will continue to annoy us for the rest of our life. I have people come to see me who have had problems for 20, 40, even 63 years is the longest I've ever solved a problem for. And because people know that they learn things over a period of time and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and then eventually they've got the problem, they think they have to somehow keep repeating the reverse of it to get the answer. And it's not. There's a dawning of time when there's a realisation, there's this little window in the brain when you look back at something and you think, that's not true, that's really not true. And it's not just knowing it, because we all know what to do, don't we? We all know what we should be doing, we all know we're exercising, what food we should eat, but then we don't do it. And that's because the program that we've got there already is so powerful, saying, this is how we normally do things. And to get there and break that, you have to talk to your unconscious in a certain way. You have to bargain with it. This is something I do that's absolutely unique. I don't know anybody else on the planet does it. It's a way of talking to the brain. So,
the last one that we have a bit of information.
Yeah, sure. So, right. The only issue I have is I have a train of thought, and the train knows. And derail us sometimes. So, I'm going to ask my glamorous assistant to the back.
I was distracted.
Oh, you're distracted, okay, yes. This is the woman that loves me so much that she actually doesn't listen to anything I say, she just goes, oh, she's my blood. Right. Yes, so, you have to talk your brain in such a way that you have the understanding that your unconscious will never, ever do you harm. And if it does let you do anything that's harmful, so some people cut themselves or whatever, some people get ME and have this real sort of terror illness that's brought on by the unconscious, but it's giving them that because the alternative is far worse in its belief, in its programming. So whenever you talk to your unconscious, you have to be aware that it's running a program that you gave it. Because apart from your bodily functions that it runs, and there's hundreds of thousands of them that it deals with all day, every day, Everything else that's in there is things you've learned. And you've learned it by your own perception of taking on things, doing them, and then going, oh, this is how it works. You then pass it to your unconscious and it runs it forever. So it runs the program. So if you've got a program in there that's no longer helpful for you, or never was helpful for you, it's not your unconscious's fault. Right? So you always have to talk to your unconscious in such a way that you say, right, we're running this program between us, and I know I put it in there, but I don't want that one anymore. And here's what we're going to have to replace it. If anybody's seen my stand, I've got a plasma ball, where you touch it and the electronic bits go out and a lightning bolt comes and touches your finger. And your brain works in that way, that it makes neural pathways. So when you do something new, it actually makes a link. And it makes this connection to lots of different areas, and it does things called associations. So when you have a memory of something, if I ask you to think of a very vivid memory from the past now, you'll be able to remember all sorts of things surrounding it. There'll be smells, there'll be feelings, because you lock it away with everything that's relevant to it. And if I ask you what you had for breakfast 4 weeks ago on a Tuesday, unless you have porridge in the morning, you'll go, I don't know, and it doesn't matter. So we don't store things of no significance, or we don't store things that have no overriding passion to them. We do store things that have fantastic joy or pleasure with them, or things that have terrible pain and agony with them. We store those because it's so different to our normal everyday life. So when we store it away, we store it with everything. So if I ask you to go back to a period of time now, let's think of something happy rather than something sad, you can actually put yourself there. So just think of something happy for a moment, right? The most happy thing you can ever think of. And what I want you to do is think of the first thing that came to your mind. Right? So think of that, and notice how it changes you. How your body becomes different. Beautiful smile at front of you. You just feel different about yourself. And just be aware that when we have moods and feelings, that we can change those moods and feelings. They are ours. Now, most of them are triggered by your unconscious, so you're not aware of them until you're in them. And this is the problem with most things, is that you're already there and it's too damn late. So when you're in that mood, you can go to any therapist or whatever while you're in that mood, and they'll give you techniques that enable you to smudge it a bit and make you feel less problematic. Or people will teach you things like, sort of, you get angry, well, count to 10. Breathe, you know, like you haven't been doing that since the day you were born. Breathe. And some of these things will work. And there's a beautiful technique I do, which is just widening your vision. So if you're focused on a problem, and you actually think about it, you end up with almost tunnel vision. Because while you're thinking about a problem, somebody else in the room doesn't exist. Because you're thinking about this problem, and your eyes are a bit glazed over. So other people could tell you thinking about that problem. And you'll be focused on this thing, and what you need to do, if you suddenly widen your vision, so I'm going to get you all to join in at this point. So think of something at the moment that bothers you. Not a major thing, right? Just think about it for a few seconds. Okay, now, here's what we do. I want you to put your fingers in front of you like this. Okay? And I want you to look past those fingers and fix on a point on the wall or on these charts or something. And just start to bring your fingers around the side, but keep your vision focused on that wall. Until you get your hands out to the side, you can bring them in quite close if you've got a neighbour. And still conceal them, so waggle them about, but still fix your vision on the wall. And now try and think of that problem while you're doing that. Right? And then fix your vision back on the wall or wherever you were thinking for a few seconds. And don't include your fingers in it. And now widen your vision again to include your fingers. And just notice that while you've got the widened vision, you actually can't think of the problem. Right? You put your hands down. Thank you. Once you've done it a few times, if you practice it and just get used to this idea of, right, I can see this far, you should eventually get to about 180 degrees. And it's a brilliant method of driving because it's so safe when you drive like that. Because you're taking the front end, you're taking the long distance view, but you're also, if somebody suddenly comes out of a side turn or whatever, you're still available for that. And while you're doing that, you're not narrowly focused on the shop you're going to, or what you're going to do that night, or what they're going to do, or whatever. It goes out of your mind because there's this beautiful broad horizon. Now, that's a technique for mending when you're there. But when you're actually, the best way to deal with it is not to get there. So the thing I deal with is getting people to look at what do they think triggered it off. And if you look at what triggered it off, then it's not usually that either. Okay? So when people come to see me, they'll tell me things, and they'll tell me a sentence, and they'll say, you know, I have this problem with my daughter, and she didn't talk to me, and stuff like that. And when you actually talk to them more, the actual problem that the daughter's got, who's three, is actually the problem that the mother's got about anger. So it's this transference of things that actually, what people tell me, I'm not particularly listening to the detail of, I try to get the theme, the concept behind it. And if you have a series of things that are all mixed up in your brain, and you go, oh, I can't get with this, then there's an overall theme for it somewhere. And you don't have to look too far because it normally narrows down to one thing, a lack of self-worth. And it's behind virtually everything. Just in the way that if you ask anybody what they want out of life, you'll eventually get to the answer, I want to be happy. It might start off with, well, when I get that new flashy car and everybody thinks I've made it, when I've got three houses, when I've got five swimming pools, and then you say, well, what would that do for you? If you keep asking the question over and over again, it'll be, well, then I'll be happy. Not realising that the only place happiness is in here. And happiness is an amazing thing. Joy, happiness and love, you can't give it away and have less than when you started. Right? It's impossible to deplete it. The only people on the planet who are miserable are the ones who lock their heart up because somebody's broken their heart and they seal it up. And they don't let any of it out. And if you don't give it away, it doesn't come back. And yet most of us can't even love ourselves. So is there anybody in the room who can actually look in the mirror, honestly, and say, I love you, to the image? One, two. Three. And how many hit three you count? No. So 20 odd people? So three out of 20 can say they love themselves. Isn't that an appalling act of things of how we actually deal with life and things? Right? That you can't actually look in the mirror and say you love yourself. And yet we like other people to love us. We can't love ourselves, and we know ourselves better than anybody else on the planet.
Takes a long time to get there, though.
But not if you come and see me. Because you see, the overall thing behind this is thoughts are just thoughts. They're as simple as that. I said this yesterday, but everything in this room was a thought at one point. You know, somebody had to design it and make it, and somebody else had to sell it, and then the person had to buy it, whoever bought it. But that was all about people's thoughts, because even the person who sold it had to think about how to sell it. Right? So there's a chain of thoughts. But it started with the original thought, like a projector. Somebody had to think, well, wouldn't it be a good idea if whatever you thought of, you could put on a bit of paper, and then you could put it on there, and you could blow it up so other people could see it. So that was a thought. Before the thought, there wasn't that projector. There was no such thing as a projector before the thought. And so we think, because we see things that are made originally from thoughts, everything, every thought we have to take notice of. And yet we don't. Somebody told me yesterday 80,000 thoughts a day, which 90% are negative. Right. So out of that 80,000 thoughts, how many of them did you actually carry out? Hardly any of them. So why is it when we get a bad thought, we think, oh yeah, look, we're miserable and everything else. And we put ourselves into that mode by travelling back in the past. So things like the anger that came from the past, the guilt that comes from the past. So if you've got guilt from the past, how long do you need to punish yourself before you can let go of that? Do you have to keep it for life? And who made that rule up? But we seem to think there are rules for things, that we have to hang on to things. But why, if I put a hot coal in your hand now, and say, can you just hold that for a minute? You throw it away. And yet that's what we do with anger and guilt and everything else. We hold the hot coal and we keep it. Good point. Let it go. It doesn't serve you anymore. So I started off doing, I'm going to do past, present, future, then I get into the door. I might do it the other way around then. Okay. So, that's all about the past. We only ever live in the present. This very second we have now. And I looked at that clock, and the clock moves on, and that's that bit of my life I'm never going to get back again. I enjoy it, I hope you did. Right? So, and that's how your life is. It's made up of lots of seconds of that hand going around. And you can either be upset with yourself, angry with yourself, or feel this guilt, or feel you need to be in pain. Or you can say, no, from now on, I can live how I want to live. And it's just a matter of learning that thoughts are thoughts, and you can ignore them. I'm going to do something different today. Yesterday I did a technique where I got people to relax and just imagine clouds going across. And when you imagine clouds going across, you, if you sat on a nice bench overlooking a wonderful view and you see clouds going across, you can just sit there and appreciate it. You don't grab the cloud that's got to there and take it and put it back on this side again and go, I'll watch it again. I'll watch it again. But we do that with the thoughts. Now, I'm not asking you to catch yourself out with everything that's negative, because thereby lies madness. But that's probably what some of us are doing. We're catching out everything we do that's negative. And we're doing this and we're doing it around the spiral. But I am asking you to look at the things that keep coming back to you and finalising them. Because your brain will not let anything go if it thinks there's still an answer to be had from it. So when we analyse stuff from the past, we're actually saying, I didn't finish this off very well. And anything you didn't finish off very well, the brain will keep looking for the solution for it.
Can I just ask you one thing on that?
Yeah, sure. Can you speak to our
question? So that you've dealt with some past issues.
Yeah.
And then you never dealt with the leader cases a lot
now. Right.
And then you learn to
say, okay. I'm going to deal with that now, just very second. You see, in life, there's not just us, is there? There's everybody else that touches on life. And it's about how we deal with other people. Now, it would be nice to think we could change other people, but we actually can't. There's nothing we can do about it. And there's an old saying that before thinking yourself mad, just check that you're not surrounded by arseholes. Because you can't. If somebody's stupid, there is very little point in having an argument with them, because you're not going to change their thinking whatsoever. The same happens with drunkards. The same happens with people who are absolutely see things black and white and determined. No point in having an argument. In fact, I see arguments as, we all have our own map of the world, and when you have an argument with somebody, you actually say, well, this, you know, my map of the world is just here. But on their map of the world, it's just over here. And we're saying, no, can't you see your form? It's over here. And they go, but it's over here on my map. And you go, no, you've got to move it to here on your map. Well, what is the point? It really doesn't matter. So in relationships, sometimes that's the compromise, because if you see things differently, so you can't both keep going to different places for your holidays and whatever, because, well, I like it hard, I like it. So you make compromises. But you can't change other people. And then I'm going to contradict myself in a few minutes, because things in life that you can't change, and there's things in life you can change. So if you can change it, do all your best to change it. There's things in life we will never change. So if you look at poverty in the third world, or people haven't got clean drinking water or whatever, and you feel terrible about it, this is the time you're thinking of the thing on TV, you can do a little bit about it, you donate your £2 a month or whatever, feel a little bit better about it, but you're not going to solve that problem. So the more you think about it, the more you get depressed over nothing, because there's nothing to do. So when we're dealing with other people, if we take it from the fact that we can't change them, there's only one thing we can change, and that's how we feel about our interaction with them. Now, as soon as you change your interaction with them, how you feel about it, you change them. You change them. Now, I'm just contradicting what I said initially, because if you try and change them, there's always the resistance. There's the push-pull thing, you know, I want you to do that, and they'll go, no, I'm not doing that. Whereas if you behave differently to them, and it's all about perception. So if you perceive a person sees you in a certain way, everything they say and do, you will behave as though your perception is right. Because we do like to think we're right. And if we hold something in our head we believe it to be true, we make it true by observing everything that actually goes along with it and throwing out anything that contradicts it. And this is why we get faith in things that, you know, everybody else can't see, that that's why you should be like that or believe in that or whatever. And we go, no, I understand it to be true because of all these things that happen. Because we look at all the evidence for it and we reject all the things that are against it. And even with bad stuff we start to do that. We start to absorb all the bad stuff, and then we'll think that people think badly of us. Now, I'm going to tell you, what other people think of you is none of your damn business. Right? It isn't. It's nothing to do with you. Right? Because they will think whatever they think of you. So they'll see what you do, how you act, and what are they basing the fact that they like or don't like you on? How similar you are to them. So they'll see things that they do, that they like doing, and they'll go, oh, you'd be my best pal, because there's so many things on our mind map are the same. Oh, you'd be best buddies. And you get on with people straight away. And some people, you just see something in them and you never actually go to a very natural conversation. That's because you recognise something in you that you don't like, that you don't want to be like, you see it in them. So you're always talking about a reflection of the other person. So what other people think about you is not what they think about you, it's what you think about you. You send that out to them. I feel worthless. They think I'm worthless. Right? It becomes a reality. I feel I'm confident. They think I'm confident. Now some people will think he's overconfident and he's arrogant. Who cares? Right? It doesn't matter. So I was telling somebody this one day who had a particular problem. She thinks that everybody's out against her, the whole world's against her, nothing's her fault, it's about everybody else. And I said, well, you know, what everybody else says about, thinks about you is none of your business, and actually you're quite shit at mind reading. And she was, because she kept saying to me, I know what you're thinking about me now. So she would tell me some intimate thing, and then say, but I know what you're thinking about me now, I told you that. And I'd go, I make no judgments whatsoever, because that's why you came to me. You have a problem, you brought your problem to me, and now you're saying I'm going to think bad of you because you've got a problem. If I thought bad of people who had problems, I'd never have customers, right? So it doesn't matter to me. Somebody has a problem, I'm going to be able to fix. Many, many years ago, I was a plumber. I didn't go to somebody's house and say, oh, you've got a leak. You must be a bad person, right? You've just got a problem, I'm going to mend it. And I mended it, right? But in the main, I show people how to value themselves now. Right, we've got off track plenty here, and I'm still looking at the time. Right, so people, what do so you can change yourself. So, if you start to understand that you're actually terrible mind readers, so what you think about somebody else is A, not your, no regard. Pay no regard to what you think other people think of you, because that's what you think about yourself. And you might be wrong about yourself. And particularly because most of you in this room can't say, I love you in the mirror, you are wrong about yourself. Right? You really should stop to love yourself. And I want you to do that as an exercise to do. I want you to do that as an exercise. When you get home or when you're near a mirror next, just, you don't even have to do it out there, particularly if it's a book of poetry. Just look in the mirror and say, I love you. Right? Now, if you can't do it, then you really have to think why you feel so bad about yourself that you actually can't say that you love yourself, even if it's a lie. Okay? Now, there is a thing I did mention briefly yesterday, and I'll cover it a bit better today. There's a thing called affirmations. And affirmations work on the idea that if you keep saying something often enough, eventually the unconscious keep hearing it, and it'll absorb it even though it's a lie. Now, I'm not a big fan of affirmations because they're too slow. I like to do things quite quickly. I like instant results. Most people like this. And then there's a thing called affirmations. An affirmation is just an affirmation that instead of saying something, making a statement, you actually ask a question. And because you ask a question, and your brain's very good at looking for answers, you ask it a question, and it goes, I'll find out for you. And it keeps working on it. And it'll work on it forever until it finds the answer. So an affirmation is a better way of doing it. But even the guy who invented it, I can't think of his name, hasn't quite tweaked right yet. Because he's still basically on the same principle as the affirmations, which actually tell it a lie, in the hope that eventually it will go across from. So what I would say is, when you do an affirmation, and you tell yourself something, you ask your question, and you phrase it in a way that means it's already happening, or it can be already happening. Right? Because it's not a lie anymore. So if you, I've dealt a lot with weight loss. So what is it that keeps me slim? Now, if you think about that carefully, that is not a lie. Right? So if you be out here, what is it that keeps me slim? It's not a lie, is it? Right? Because then the brain has to go, well, what is it that keeps you slim? Well, keeping you slim is eating the right amount of calories at the right time, eating fresh fruit, and doing all the right things. So, as soon as you go for the chocolate biscuit, it goes, that isn't what keeps you slim. So just go. In fact, it doesn't even need to do that, because you don't even think about the chocolate biscuit there, because the thought of chocolate biscuit, before it says it in your head, has already arrived there, chocolate biscuit. The other bit goes, well, that's not what keeps you slim. You can make up your own affirmation, anything you want, but make it a question that is not a lie, and it will work faster. Then you have to repeat it fewer times. So, coming back to how do you affect other people. When we start a relationship, it's entirely different to when it's a few months in. So we have this honeymoon period where we think somebody is absolutely fantastic, we worship the ground that they walk on, and we can't see any faults in them whatsoever. And reality can't go on like that, because we have to see them as a normal human being. We can use the toilet seat up, or whatever. I'm just going to go on a quick rant here, but I'm a toilet lid putter down there. Unusual for a guy, I should have had a cheer for that. But when women come to my house and use my toilet, they leave the lid up. Now, I don't know where I'm shouting. Hey, come on, you've got a couple of them. Anyway, sorry. Put myself right off the net. So, dealing with people. So, say, yeah, I'm throwing myself right here. So, when we feel a certain way about a person, that's it, right? I'm coming back on track. When we feel a certain way about a person, we get an over-idealised idea of them. And then as we start to know them better, some bits start to annoy us. Now, if they're the bit, the noises that initially we found quite endearing, and it now comes into this, it might be the way they talk or anything, and suddenly we go, oh, that's quite irritating, actually. Then we usually break up shortly after. But in long-term relationships, we get to know what each other likes and so on. But then we drift into the day-to-day routine. And we forget about what happened when we first started off. And we can get this idea in the mind of, I don't want to split up, I don't want to divorce, I don't want, you know, this to happen. And the best way to make something happen is to think about it and include the negative words. So a better thought, as soon as you catch the negative words, is to change it into a positive, is to, how would I like this to be now? What did we do when we first got together that made us so much in love? Now you concentrate on that, and you change now. Now, this is not changing them straight away, but if you change back into the way you felt about them when you first started off, even if at first you have to do a bit of bluffing, you actually change in a different way to them, and they see you as different, and they start to meet you halfway. It might take a bit of time, but it does work.
Could you use that strategy, see if you've got siblings and children?
Absolutely.
He was talking a lot about when he met somebody, but I wasn't meaning that.
Right.
It was interesting that he was acting in his help.
Yeah.
You can use that for...
Every technique I use is about how your brain works. Yeah, it's all about how your brain works. So if you behave differently... Now, I have a thing called going there first. And it's a technique I learned when I heard about this hypnotherapist who could stare in your eyes and actually put you to sleep. And I thought, that's impossible. And I went and asked him, and he told me how to do it. 2 minutes later, I could do it. And all he did was, he looked in somebody's eyes, and he would chat to them, with permission, of course. And he would look in their eyes, and he would chat to them, and then he'd start putting himself into trance. And as he started putting himself in trance, he got a rapport with them by this time. They would start to join him in putting himself into trance. And just as they went, he would bring himself back. And from that, I took this idea of going there first. So if you want somebody to calm down, I've seen all of these police programs where they capture somebody and they handcuff them and they've got them against the wall and the guy's getting in on it. And they're going, calm down. Well, if I was calm and somebody shook me against the wall and started telling me to calm down like that, I'd get angry. Whereas if you went, okay, well, you've got the cuffs on, you're not going anywhere. If you struggle, one of us is going to get hurt. A bit frightened might be. Just calm down. And then just... And as you can see, change your voice slightly, you lower it down a bit, just a little bit slower, and suddenly you've all got a chance to think. Because when people are agitated and so on, they're thinking fast and hard.
Actually, that's what you've just done there.
Yeah.
That actually, you could feel that when you're going that way, you could feel that.
Yeah, it's what I do for a living. Yeah. Now, if I'm talking to somebody and I've got permission to put them into trance, I will actually talk to them and then just change the way I'm talking and they go into trance. So if somebody's worried about hypnosis or whatever, and it's the most vulnerable thing. So if somebody's worried about it, I say, well, look, we're not going to do trance at the moment, we'll do it later on. All I'm going to ask you to do is relax, and I'll chat to them, and then at the appropriate time, I'll just talk to them, I'll do what I need to do with them, they'll enjoy the process, and I'll gradually bring them out of it, and they won't even know they're doing trance. So it really is that people join with your energy. And like if I stood out here and yawned a few times, eventually everybody in the room does. And the same with rapport. When we get on well with people, it's because we're actually doing similar things to them. So we're back to the oh, you're like me. Oh, well, if you're leaning on your elbow and I lean on my elbow. But we don't do this deliberately. If you do it deliberately, then people catch you out and go, oh, yeah, you did that because I did that. But you do it naturally. We do this naturally. If we really like somebody, we mirror what they do. And so if somebody's really angry and you don't want them to be angry, don't join them in the anger. Because you've got two bundles of energy and fighting each other. And like I say, a disagreement or an argument is trying to get somebody else to see your point of view and override their own. Well, who does that? No point in it. There's absolutely no point in it. An agreement between people is great. So you talk about things. And you go, well, I think it's like this, I think it's like this. Oh, well, you think it's like that, or I think it's like that. You do that. And then you go, I still don't agree with it. But it's very interesting. That's fine. What's wrong with that? Because you'll never get them to do it. But if you actually join in with them, or you think that they think that you're a terrible person, you'll treat them in such a way sometimes. There's a thing called reframing, I'll talk to you very quickly about, which just changes people in an instant. Which is to get people to see a different side to what they're talking about. So I went to an event where it was one of these things where you grab a coffee and then you turn around and you try and get a group of people talking, chatting, and it was really packed. And I turned around, I looked at this little small space, and there's this woman looking at me, and she's down here somewhere, and the face like misery. And I went, did you have a good journey? She went, and I asked her something else, and I got into real misery once. And I thought, oh God, I don't know how to extract myself out of this. So eventually I said, well, you don't mind me saying you look a bit down. I've never had you before, but you look a bit down. She went, oh, I've just been made redundant. Now, at which point you would normally say, oh, sorry to hear that. And I went, brilliant! With as much enthusiasm as I could muster. And she looked at me as if to say, you idiot. Did you not hear me? She went, I just said I've been made redundant. Wow. Brilliant. Just think of all those opportunities you've got now. You've never had. All those things that you wanted to do, that you can now do. And the eyes went. And then I could nearly count like a dozen things that she thought of. Whereas her eyes don't do that. And she went really quiet. And she got taller. And I smiled a bit. So when somebody's telling you some rubbish, try and guide them to what good could come out of that situation. Just gently, but let it seem like they thought of it. Because as soon as I said that to her, she thought of 12 different ways of making life better. I hadn't thought of it. I just triggered her off to stop looking at things like that and twist it around. Right, I'm going to try and do this as quick as possible. So, would you like to do a quick exercise? It's from Energy in Motion. And it's just about getting rid of tension from a certain problem. Okay? Because in our heads we store stuff, but we also store it in a body. Because like everybody on the planet smiles with this, the mouth goes up the corner, and when they're sad we go down the corners, and that happens in every single country. So we are programmed that our body does certain things when we're in certain states. Right? So what we're going to do is we're going to find that tension. Now, I can do this one of two ways. I can go in somebody's head, work out what causes the tension, and remove that, and it removes the tension. Or I can go into somebody's body and remove the tension, and it removes the thought from the head. So today we're going to do it the other way around, and we're going to do it from the body. Okay, I'm not going to touch you. Right, you're not going to touch yourself. So, I just want you to think of something that bothers you. So, take on a small problem, not something too major. And when you've thought of that, I want you to feel it inside you. Where is that? If you're not feeling anything inside, just go to a bigger problem until you can get a feeling inside. Okay? Usually the first thing you think of is the best. So think of that feeling. And now, to yourself, just describe it. Is it sharp? Is it soft? Where is it in your body? What's the size of it? Just visualize it in there. Just feel this blocked energy. Now, there is no such thing as good or bad energy. There is either energy that's moving or energy that's stagnant. And when you've got this trapped energy, you've just got stagnant energy that's still got the problem. So what we're going to do is move it. So as soon as you can tune into this thing in your body, just feel that feeling. And I want you to feel like it's starting to swirl, and like the molecules are coming apart gently, and it's expanding out, but it's becoming softer and gentler. And just feel it expanding out into your body. Just starting to swirl around and feel it moving. This is just old energy just been trapped in you and you want to get rid of it. So just feel it swirling around in your body. As it swirls around, just think of where you'd like it to exit your body. So just pick a spot, wherever you thought of when I said that, that is the place it needs to exit. So think of it exiting from that point. Now I want you to think of a place where new energy is coming in, new fresh energy. I'll send some out to you so that you can get some energy in there. So just feel some fresh energy and feel where that needs to come into you. And so join the three things up. Join the energy coming in, feel it going and entering the energy that was stagnant, feel it swirling around, feel that new vibrancy, that new joy and happiness coming into you. And feel it swirling around and mixing with the other stuff and actually now making it all wonderfully live as it exits through your body in the place that you've chosen. And now just feel that going through and feel it flushing through you as it enters in, swirls around, clears it all the way out and goes out through the place of your choice. And now I want you to imagine it doing it in an instant, like a lightning strike coming in and going out of you again. And then I want you to do it again. Push it through. Push it through. Push it through. Push it through. And keep doing that. And now imagine that it's really going through all the time like a lightning strike, but constantly going through you, washing in through one side, swirling around in your body, getting rid of all that tension that you have there, and any memory of the problem that it was that you had. And just feel it exiting and just relieving you. Just feel your body now full of that wonderful energy as it all starts to come back into place. Wonderful flushing, it's all gone. And know that you can do this at any time in your life. You can go and be in this wonderful place. You can get rid of any issue, any tension in you, just by thinking through it. And there's a lovely expression that comes from Qigong. And it's, if you have tension in any part of your body, you can literally just think about it. And so if the back of your neck, you say, back of my neck, is starting to relax. It's relaxing. It's now totally relaxed. And if you do it in that calm way, going there first attitude, you'll actually start to feel it melting. Okay. So, as I said at the beginning, there are some prize draw things you can fill out here. You can have a session with me on my stand. If you leave your email address, you will get a notification of all my future talks and links to this talk and the one I did yesterday and previous ones I've done. And just come on and chat with me. It's been wonderful talking to you. And, thank you very much.